Mr. Brown, Rail 10. Right, Mr. Brown, you're describing how part of the battalion was up on the Acropolis. Does that mean that you had, like, a landline laid out up to there?
No, we didn't have a landline that I remember. It was wireless.
And you were saying that in terms of reception, was reception bad generally during this period?
It was bad when you were walking along streets that had high buildings. When you went round a corner, it suddenly disappeared. But with the company on the Acropolis, of course, they were nice and high up, and we weren't too bad.
And did you bother with the landlines during this period at all?
No, I don't remember bothering at all with the landlines in that period at Athens. I don't think we settled down too long before we went to the coast. We seemed to go onto the coast road.
Now, you mentioned that the battalion was sniped as you moved into Athens. Mm. What do you remember about this? You said it's a fairly brief period, but this period when you were in the Athens area, any incidents with the local civilians or with the guerrilla forces?
No, I don't remember anything in the Athens period, but it wasn't until we moved into the coast road. It had a name, on the way to Piraeus along the coast road we went. And I remember things then, but at the beginning, I don't think we were really involved in a sense. We were there, I think, primarily at the beginning just to keep the peace. But as things developed, we had to become involved. We had to interfere, you know, with the fighting that was going on between the ELAS and the other factions, and the gendarmerie and people like that.
How did you understand the situation then? What did you think was actually going on in Greece? Whose side were you on?
Well, we understood really that the ELAS were the bad guys, as it were. They were trying to take over the country. I mean, they had been supplied to make things awkward for the Germans, supplied with weapons and so on. But there'd been a sort of hiatus when the Germans moved out, and they were trying to take over, and nobody really wanted the communists to take over there, so they had to be stopped.
Was there anybody that you knew that was actually maybe a little bit sympathetic towards?
No, I didn't hear anybody. Not very sympathetic when people are shooting at you.
Now, in terms of when you were in Athens, did you have any kind of freedom to go out apart from being on duty?
No, I don't remember being out at all in Athens. In fact, I don't remember much about the Athens part of it at all. It wasn't until we got, as I said, to the coast road that I remember odd things.
So what happened there?
Well, it was a strange situation. I should imagine it's possibly not as bad, or I don't know, as Ireland, where in the mornings it's Calimera and spies from the local population, and then when night falls the guns come out and the shooting and one thing and another. So you didn't know who the enemy was, and it was a confusing situation. But I remember one particular night, because the battalion headquarters was attacked, and I was in this house with the CO just on one side of a narrow alley running off the coast road, and there were people on the other side where I think we were billeted and slept. But anyway, I was with the CO in this house, and we weren't on the ground floor. We seemed to be upstairs, but the stairs didn't run like in a normal semi-detached house up the side and so on. There seemed to be just a hole in the floor, and the steps ran down from that down to cellars and things, I'm sure. Anyway, it was all the usual shootings and noises and bangs and so on outside, and shouts of "Come out, we're going to blow the place up, we're going to blow the building up." And it got quite serious, and the CEO said, "Get on to C Company," I think it was, C Company, and asked them to send some people around, you know, to shift these characters from outside. And C Company replied that they had plenty on their hands, thank you very much, and couldn't do much about it. So this went on, and I said the CEO was a brave man. I mean, he never looked as though he would say, all right, then we'll go out and sort of give ourselves up. And I remember noises down in this cellar place down below, and the CEO was standing on one side of this staircase going down with his gun out ready, and I had the set at the other side, and I had the Tommy gun, and that was ready. And I thought, one thought did pass my mind, I thought, well, the Tommy gun is no good for long range, but in this sort of situation it's an ideal weapon, and for close work, you know, it really was good. And that sort of standoff went on for I don't know how long, but then there was a huge bang, a really big crash, and fortunately for us, it was the building on the other side of this alleyway that had been dynamited from outside, and a whole section had been toppled down. And not funny, but strange that there were one or two injured a little bit, and it was strange that the Sergeant Cook, of all people, was injured there and had to be dragged out. And it's this sort of situation. Of course, the next morning it's all quiet and you walk outside. So it was a strange situation.
And so, in view of that, what were your reactions to the civilian population, I mean, that you came into contact with?
Were you I don't, you know, I seem to remember that along the seafront, you know, there's a bar or two, and, you know, and before it got dark, if you could go out, you went out, and I remember having a drink or two in these bars. And no bother at all. Get back before it got really dark.
Now, apparently, according to the battalion history, during this major attack on the various company positions, there was quite a few men were taken prisoner. Did word of that filter back to you?
No, I didn't hear about that.
And what did you... I mean, you'd been in action with the Germans in a conventional kind of war. And this was like what we'd now call kind of like an almost like a guerrilla terrorist kind of war. How do you think the battalion coped with that? And was it difficult to adjust to that kind of situation? Or
I found the environment difficult to adjust to. You'd been used to being out in the open, hills, fields, and living out in the open, and in that situation, it seemed enclosed, and I noticed that difference. But
had you did any training in terms of like house clearance and that kind of?
No, I don't remember any.
Now, so this was in the seafront location. Anything else happened during this period?
No, I think that's the thing that stands out. In my mind, of course, it would, being affected by it.
Now, apparently, General Alexander briefly visited the battalion, I think around about Christmas time. Do you remember anything about that?
No, I'm afraid not.
So, how long do you think you're out in this coastal location for?
Well, we moved from there to Patras. But I should think we'd have spent Christmas at that location, so we would move to Patras early in the new year.
Do you remember anything about the Christmas celebrations of how the battalion tried to celebrate Christmas?
No, I don't.
So, however, they did try to celebrate it.
It's gone from memory.
Now. During this period, was there any attempt to kind of lecture the members of the battalion on what the situation was and what your role was and what the British government government was trying to do by putting troops into Greece.
No, I don't remember any lectures.
So what happened next from this period then?
Well, we were sent to Patras, and we had to go by ship, I remember. And I think we might have gone up the Corinth Canal. I seem to remember the Corinth Canal there. And landed at Patras and were put into a big warehouse in Patras. And everything then seemed to go quiet from my memory. We didn't seem to be involved in any real action at all in Patras that I can remember.
So how did the battalion fill its time? What were you doing on a daily basis here?
I've no idea. The days just passed somehow. I remember we could go out into Patras. We had a photo taken in Patras. We could go out for a drink in the evening. We were in this, it possibly could have been a big tobacco warehouse, I think. And we just spent the days like that. I can't remember what we were doing.
How did people cope with the, you know, the local beverages?
Not too well in some cases. Some better than others. But I told you Frank Reynolds had been wounded in Italy, somewhere in the Gothic line, I think, because we'd been out with the CO, and the shelling had gone on, and battalion headquarters had taken quite a bit of shelling, and Frank Reynolds was wounded, I can't say exactly where, and he joined us back in Patras, and of course we were drinking ouzo, and Frank, out of hospital, etc., probably hadn't had many drinks, but the first night he went out and started drinking ouzo, of course, you drink it like water, and it's not water, and he was picked up by regimental police. Somebody picked him up, but we got him home, and that was all right.
Were there other units that you were cooperating with during this period, or was it just like a battalion?
I can't remember cooperating with any other units.
So in terms of...
I mean, there was no need to cooperate, I don't think, with anybody in Patras.
Now, according to the battalion history, again, Anthony Eden visited sometime in February. Do you remember anything about his visit?
I seem to be bad on visits, but I don't remember Anthony Eden either.
And again, according to the battalion history, as the situation quietened down, the battalion, you were able to have things like cross-country run competition and various sports. Do you remember anything about those going on?
Oh, yes, I remember cross-country runs and so on. But I think by that time, we weren't in Patras. The cross-country run that I remember, because I remember I was on the, what you might call a control set at headquarters, and we had sets at various points manned by various people around the course, and, you know, to get reports coming in. And by that time, we were back in the, Piraeus, somewhere area, somewhere along there.
Could it be Phaleron?
Phaleron, that name seems to ring a bell, yeah.
Yeah, I think according to the battalion history. Yeah. Now, you've mentioned this control set.
Mm.
Was that a different kind of radio? Was it the same?
Oh, no, it's just, you know, you were on the set at headquarters, and the people were in a ring around you, more or less, around the different points in the cross country. So I do remember that, yes.
And that was like rigged up so that you could give commentary on?
That's right, yeah.
So you didn't take part in the run yourself?
No, I didn't.
What about your football in the army? Was this still continuing on?
It was. We played a couple of games, I remember, in Athens. We played against an Athens 11, the division, I remember, at the Panathinaikos ground. And because I remember they had a very strong team, and a big chap played centre forward for them called Dougie Reed, and he played for Portsmouth. Played for Portsmouth after the war, because I saw him play at Sunderland after the war. He was a big, craggy centre forward, and I remember playing against that 11, and they must have beat us handsomely, I think.
And was that playing for the division?
Yeah.
So how did that come about? How did you get selected to play for the division?
I don't know. You just got word that you were asked to play for the division. But who selected and and so on.
So there was,
I don't know who picked the division team at all.
Was there anybody else from the 16th in the divisional team?
Yeah, Jerry Best. He was in the division team as well. He was a good inside forward, was Jerry.
And was there anybody else? I mean, you mentioned one man that played professional football after the war. Was anybody else within that team that
I remember playing against, I think it was Arthur Mee, somewhere abroad. I can't remember where it was. I remember watching a game, and Wilf Mannion, and the outside forward, he could play left or right, played for England. Preston, he played for Preston North End. He's a director of Preston North End now. And he was playing, and I marvelled at the way they played, because you were standing on the touchline more or less, and you could see them at close quarters. But I never played against them. But I remember, I think it was Arthur May I played against as well. And there were one or two other people. I remember two playing for Scottish teams that I played against, but I can't remember names.
And during this period, you were in Greece. Were people following the situation in Italy? Or had you put that to the back of your mind?
I think it was largely put to the back of the mind. But I think if there was any following, it was hoping that good progress was being made, and that we wouldn't be too involved again.
Now, as we move into kind of early, you know, February, March 45, that kind of period, what were people's feelings about how long the war was going to last? How long did you think it was going to go on for?
Well, I think it was generally accepted then that with the news coming through from both Italy's in Europe, from the German side and from the Italian side, that you know, there's big progress being made all around, and that with a bit of luck, it wouldn't be too long before it was over.
And what were people's thoughts when you were posted back to Italy? Or did you know you were being sent back to Italy when you moved out of Greece?
Yes, we knew we were going back to Italy. The thoughts were, once again, I think just what I said before, hoping we weren't going to be too involved.
Now, had you still been receiving reinforcements and so on when you were in Greece?
Can't remember.
What do you remember about the move back to Italy?
Just remember the journey once again by boat. Remember one that Walter Webley, poor soul, he was a terrible sailor, and he just used to wrap himself up in a ball somewhere and wait there until the boat docked before he got up. But I don't remember much about the trip over at all.
So he never, despite all your sea journeys, he never adapted?
No, he didn't. Funnily enough, I told you I was sick for about 3 days first going over, and yet I was never sick again after that. But poor Walter, you know, had some really sick periods. So we went back to Taranto when we went back. We didn't go back to Naples, I don't think.
And then what happened?
Well, we sort of mustered together at Taranto from memory, and then in next to no time we were back on a boat, and we were going round the coast of Italy to land at Ancona, and then moved inland and presumably set up camp somewhere.
Now, the war was in its... the European war was in its closing stages at this time. According to the battalion history, this is early April, mid-April, 45. Now, within the signal platoon, obviously, you were well-placed to listen to radio broadcasts and so on. Was there more of that going on at this stage?
Oh, yes. Yeah. A great interest, really, to find out if we would be needed or wouldn't be needed.
Now, just on that point, when you did listen to the radio broadcasts, what would be the preferred station that you would listen to get the news?
I can't remember what was the preferred station. You just twiddled around until you found a station that you could understand.
Just a general point, and again, this is for the entire battalion period.
I was going to add to that to say it seemed to be usually the American forces.
So it was American rather than the BBC?
Mm, yeah.
And what did you think of their service?
The American Forces Network service on the radio. It was okay.
Now, apparently the Germans at certain points had kind of propaganda broadcasts in English. Mm-hmm. Did anybody ever listen to them?
I can't remember hearing any. Well, anybody else listened to them, I wouldn't know, but I didn't hear any.
So, basically, you were back in Italy. You were hoping that the thing was going to be over. Any other memories between arriving back in Italy and the day when it was over? Anything else happening?
I remember somewhere we met up with the 1st Battalion, DLI, and... we might have even played them a couple of times, but playing football against the 1st Battalion, whether that was in that period or another period, I wouldn't be sure. But no, I can't remember anything at all between getting to Ancona and getting into some kind of camp, whatever it was, and hearing the news that the war was over.
And how did you hear that news?
Well, it came over the radio and everybody, you know, was agog. And the vino started flowing.
And what else happened that day? What else did you do?
Well, we drank with the signal platoon that was there for a while. And then I remember Danny and me, these two brigade signalers, going back to brigade and spending a part of the night with them and some hijinks there, and then getting back to the battalion and I think continuing drinking until we went to sleep.
And was that the general response of everybody
in the battalion?
Oh, I think
so, yeah.
So what was your feeling at that point?
I don't know, it'd be a mixture of feelings, I should think. Relief, joy, whatever.
And the next day, after that day?
Well, the next day you'd have a headache.
So so that would be like May the 8th, VE Day.
Yeah.
Was there any attempt by the authorities to kind of, you know, were things like Churchill's broadcast and so on from London, was it possible to listen to that?
No, I don't remember hearing that.
So it was all, it was the news, but it was kind of second hand. So there was a feeling of relief.
Yeah.
That the European war was over. What did you think the future held for you now that that was?
Well, we weren't sure. I was amongst the youngest in the battalion, and the older ones started ribbing us, saying we were due to go to the Far East any time, and that sort of thing went on, but we weren't sure what was going to happen to us.
Was that a fear that people had, or was that just a...
Oh, it was, with me it was a fear, yes. I'm quite liable to be bitten by any mosquito or anything that's around. And I thought of going into the jungle. I thought I wouldn't die from wounds, I'd just die from being bitten. And I didn't look forward to that at all.
And I mean, obviously that was a fear. Was there any feelings about what your role might be in Italy and in Europe generally? I mean, you're an operational battalion, you're in the northern part of Italy. What your duties might be now? Well, what was the kind of, what was the rumour mill? What were people talking about?
I don't think people had much chance to get settled down into rumours and whatnot, because it seemed to me that next to no time, I wouldn't like to say what date it was, but we were on trucks and we were heading up to Austria.
And where did you go to?
When we got into Austria, we went to a little place near Klagenfurt called Bruckel. And it was just a collection of cottages round a green, really, not very much there at all. And we were due to go into huts. But the huts were found to be bug-ridden because it housed Yugoslavs, wandering people, and presumably most of their animals as well, from what I heard about the state of the huts, because we couldn't go into these huts, and we were billeted on the local population. And Danny and I went into one of these little cottages where there was a lady and two young sons and a young daughter. I think there was three. Yeah, and we slept on the floor. Of course, there wasn't room for beds and everything, but we were billeted in there.
And what was their reaction, to British soldiers moving in?
Well, this the lady of the house, her husband was a prisoner in France, but she was very well disposed towards us. She, you know, never made any fuss about anything. Very kind. If they had food, you know, even offer you food, but, you know, we didn't eat there. Obviously, we had our own food. And, I mean, we were more likely to give them things like toothpaste and things like that than anything else, or a bit of chocolate for the children. So it was a very happy atmosphere in that house.
What was generally, when you arrived in this Austrian village, what was the general kind of attitude, do you think, of the Austrian civil population?
Well, this one was very, as I told you, is very good indeed. But there were people who were, you know, give you queer looks, and you felt wouldn't be cooperative.
And what was the British Army's policy? What are the British authorities told the soldiers about your attitude? Your behaviour towards the civilians, what had they advised you?
Oh, there was a non-fraternisation policy. You weren't supposed to fraternise with the local people.
And how did they define fraternisation? I mean, did that mean you couldn't speak to them, or what limits did they?
Well, I think it probably meant you didn't get too involved with them.
And within the billet, do you think you were breaking that those rules by giving them toothpaste and whatever?
I would like to say, maybe we were, but I'm sure it went on.